Welcome to French Renault Diaries Uncensored, Bants and Rants. The shorter episodes, in between the chunkier ones we've actually put some thought into, where we get everything off our chests. Will you learn anything?
Probably.
Yes.
Will you laugh?
Possibly.
Will we?
Without a doubt.
In this episode, Chateau DIY, win a chateau. Now, obviously, my first thought was, wow, that's a hell of a prize, isn't it?
They could realise their dream only to find if they win, or sorry, you know, you don't meet this criteria or that criteria. And, you know, that ferry that you crossed to come here? Well, you need to get a return ticket.
We lived quite a bohemian existence. We just renovated our own property. We didn't have to prove that we had any money in the bank. But people can't do that now. You have to hit the ground running.
I'm Sue.
I'm Rosie.
I'm Michaela.
Let's get to it.
Good morning, ladies. How are we? We've all survived January, I hope.
Morning. Yeah, just about, I think.
What about you, Sue?
Yeah. Do you know what? I love it. I mean, we were away for the first couple of weeks of it.
Yes.
But I really like it. And I like the fact that it's gradually getting lighter and it's kind of getting brighter. And anyway, have we been watching anything?
I've been watching bits and pieces, mostly YouTube. So, yeah, mostly, you know, the guy in Normandy that I usually watch, just seeing what he's doing, how he's, like, struggling through his through his work. Yeah, he's building a staircase at the moment. So it's just, you know, it's quite entertaining. I'm kind of egging him on as he goes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched him, like, for 20 minutes, like, tackle some brambles in his garden the other day. And I was like, I turned to John and went, who watches this? And he's like, well, you are.
Yeah. I don't know if any of you know about the new, I think we shared it, didn't we? The new TV programme that's coming out with Chateau DIY. Chateau DIY, win a chateau.
Oh, I haven't watched it, but I've seen it in the ether.
Yeah, so basically the show is from the same, Channel 4. It's from the same, I don't know if you watched the Great B&B Challenge when a couple won one of those, and they're now in a new life in the sun showing how they move and all that kind of thing. So it's quite interesting to follow them. But this is win a chateau. Now, obviously, my first thought was, wow, that's a hell of a prize, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's amazing. We'd all, yeah, you know.
And then I saw the building,
I suppose.
And I thought, okay.
Is it a chateau?
A small one?
I would.
A petit chateau?
Yeah. To me, I mean.
A manoir?
I mean, it may be called chateau something and it may have been in its day, but to me, it's a maison de maître with a few outbuildings.
Oh, is it?
It's not huge in chateau terms. It's in Normandy. And I watched the first episode. So there's 12 couples in all over the 4 weeks. And there's four couples for 3 weeks and then a final. So I've seen the first episode and I have to say, I thought it was quite boring. In terms of, it says in it, we're going to check their renovation skills. We're going to do all this, do all that.
Yeah, that's what I read. But it's not, is it?
No. It's more interior design. It's more interior decorating. Okay. So they're having to say they've got challenges. So this week's challenge was there's two garages that have already been fitted out. They've been plasterboarded. They've got a lovely stone wall. So the kind of the shell is there. It's ready to go.
Oh, so they're just styling.
Yes,
basically.
It's a blank canvas. So they can put paneling on the wall and they have to make sure there's a bar area. And yeah, it's just interior decorating, basically.
So who's bought it in order to be able to give it as a prize?
The TV company.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what they're doing is each week, when they're finished, the judges are people from Chateau DIY.
Yeah, I saw that as well. That's been coming up on my Facebook. Yeah, Chateau DIY star, like Stephanie out of Chateau Diaries, is it? And there's a couple, I can't remember the names, they're in the late 50s maybe, and they've bought a mill now, but they had a chateau.
Quite close to
in
me.
The last series. Yeah.
Yes.
Donna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
Donna,
and now they're close to me, I think. Yeah.
But it's, I don't know who the presenter is, but I found it a bit flat. I think it would probably be quite popular because somebody's winning a chateau, so people are going to be really, really intrigued by it.
Yeah. Is there a point to having the chateau? Win a chateau and then you make a business out of it and they follow you, or you just give you the chateau and then you've got to kind of learn how to pay for all the maintenance yourself and like
learn the language and, yeah, all that bump. They just leave you to that, do they? Like, drop you in a foreign country in a chateau?
I don't really know. I mean, Scott said, great, you win a chateau, but these things cost tens of thousands to run every year.
I know.
And I think most of them are going to be doing, they've got ideas, they want to either rent things out, do retreats, the usual. But I think it said they can do what they want. They can have it as a private home. They can run it as a business. It's theirs to do with what they wish.
Are they Brits, Sue, or are they people living in France already?
They're from the UK, but I will put money on it, and this is just me being quite cynical, that somebody who wins it, there'll be an EU citizen in the couple. I went with the Great B&B Challenge. I said to Scott from the outset, there were two Irish couples. He says one of them will win it.
Right. Why? Why do you think that?
EU passport.
They don't have to have a visa.
More streamlined.
Oh, right. They don't have to sort out all that. No. Yeah.
And they've not got a business set up. So they'd have to do.
That's true, actually. How does all that work? Because you have to prove that you've got an income, haven't you, to come to France now from the UK?
Yeah.
You have to prove that if you're going to set up a business, then you have to do a business plan and show them how it's going to work and how much you expect to earn from it. Or you have to have, I think it's a bit like Jersey or somewhere like that, where you have to have a lot of money in the bank and prove that you can look after yourself.
Yeah.
Is that how it works? Because we came before all that.
Yeah.
So
I'm not a legal immigration lawyer, but I know on the credits there was a credit for an immigration lawyer and lawyers. So I'm assuming all of that'll be covered for whoever wins it.
So all these people will have been checked out in advance, basically.
You'd hope so.
To know that they are eligible. And that seems like a lot of preparation. I mean, they can't just pick any old couple, can they?
No, because they could realise their dream only to find if they win. You don't meet this criteria or that criteria, and you know that ferry that you cross to come here. Well, you need to get a return ticket.
Do you know what else?
Yeah.
You know what else is? It's not just getting the visa. It's when you come to renewal. If you've not made the money that your business plan has said, they can just refuse you.
Yeah, I read that in Connections. There was a couple that were actually under house arrest.
Was it like
literally they couldn't go very far from, I think so. It was an article in Connections, and they said because they hadn't,
she was making and selling jewellery, but wasn't making anywhere near the SMIC level, which has now increased this year. So she hadn't,
which is minimum wage, say, SMIC, for everybody out there,
And that she has to present herself at the gendarmerie and feels like a criminal.
Yes.
What happened?
Parole or something.
Renewal visa, not being able to produce the right levels of income to stay.
No, but what's happened since? Because I know I read something, they had a 30-day queue thing.
Yes, I read
they?
That as well.
So what?
Don't know. To be continued.
Yeah, they were very angry about it in the article. Yeah. I kind of get why. I feel like we were kind of lucky, really, to come before Brexit, like you guys were, because it is very complicated now. But yeah, that it sounded awful because they were like integrated into the local village and things like that. So they tried and they'd formed a business and they'd bought their property outright. I don't know, but they were still in threat of being sent back.
But I also read this, and I'm sure you may have seen it in French news or Facebook posts, but the government want to stem the flow of immigration for 2 to 3 years coming into France.
I did read that recently, maybe this morning, actually,
What, kind of reduce it?
Yeah.
Control it, I suppose.
Be a bit more control. Yeah. I mean, they've put a lot more stricter language requirements in, haven't they, in criteria. And I think people don't realise when they get the business plan and it gets approved, that's fabulous, but you've got to then stick to that because they're the kind of requirements of your visa. And if you don't meet them, like these people, you could get refused a renewal, and that's devastating. Yeah.
It's really like the opposite of what we did when we came to France, because we lived quite a bohemian existence. We just renovated our own property. We didn't have to prove that we had any money in the bank, and we didn't have to, prove that we had a job. And we kind of came to France to live like that in the beginning, just to kind of live a different existence, a little bit like more relaxed and get away from the rat race for a bit. But people can't do that now. You have to hit the ground running. in that scenario, yeah. don't you? You have to make sure you've got a business, you know what you're doing, you've proven it's going to make some money, and then try and prove that what you predicted is right. Yeah. So,
and I imagine that's really difficult, because when we arrived with Finn, with children as well, it took about 18 months for us to kind of properly settle into the new life with school, get all the yes. bureaucracy done, to have to then, I mean, Scott was working in the UK then, so we were all right money-wise, but to then have to try and build a business on top of all that, I imagine it's the most, I couldn't do it. I don't think I'd be able to do it now.
Well, we arrived with...
I wouldn't want to.
We arrived in France with 3 months' savings.
Yeah, we had none.
You know, we'd... Yeah, but, you know, first year's earnings were €52. So as I know we've spoken about it in previous episodes, but you have to rely on yourself. You have to give you, you know, constantly kick yeah. yourself up the backside, because no one's going to save us. And, you know, we certainly didn't want to fail. It was never an option. But yeah, if we had to do this process all over again, it would be an outright no for us.
Yeah, us too, I think. I liked the way that we could do it organically. Yeah. When we yeah. moved here, it wasn't a pressure. It wasn't even like we have to make it work. And when we first came, we didn't even know if we were going to stay, but it all happened mm-hmm. organically. You know, you meet people, you make friends, then you integrate, and then you, you know, renovate. And we, yeah, none of that pressure. So,
I mean, you think visa and you automatically go, ugh. I mean, we're doing our renewals this year. I don't know about, because we're still on a 5-year. I mean, it doesn't bother me doing it. It's just a paper exercise. It's very
easy. You'll be fine.
But I imagine, because most people come on a 1-year visa and then they have to, it's some will get the multi up to 4 years, but then they have to keep renewing every year, doing the same process, proving the same thing every year, and we know how time flies. And then after 5 years, they've got to make a decision where they go for the 10-year, and if they do, they now have to the language requirements B1. And a lot of people aren't yeah. even A1 at that point.
No.
So it's just another added thing that you have to, it's a good thing, I think.
Yes.
Because it yeah. does make you do it. If you want to stay, yeah. you have to do it.
I suppose so. And, you know, I feel sorry that it's not like it used to be in some ways, where it's freer and you can have an adventure. It's like, it's less of an adventure in that respect, isn't it? If all these things have to be put in place, it takes away that adventurous kind of
yeah.
aspect to it. It's like, you know, so that I feel sorry for people coming over and having all that to deal with straight away. And it must cost a lot of money, yeah, to get all the things in place, lawyers and
250 euros.
Yeah, but I mean, it must be more than that. It must be like, you know, by the time you've done all the research, paid for all the people to help you understand the things that you need to understand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Translate all the documents that you probably need to, like, prove from the UK, and you have to translate them all into yeah. French.
The initial is thousands, but the renewal process is 250 per person. And then when we've got some clients that have run into difficulties, because I think last year, when it was up for renewal, they'd obviously done their driving license. But because there was an overlap and a miscommunication with the prefect, for a short period of time, they looked like illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
it causes sleepless nights.
Yeah, it's another point that bureaucracy is so slow that there are periods that do get a bit like hair-raising in that respect. I mean, Zach, our son Zach, he turned 18. Last January, he's just turned 19 and he's still not got his teacher de séjour. Mm. So I was a little bit late, like pushing it forward, but we went to the prefecture, we gave in all the documents. I mean, bearing in mind he's been in France since he's 5 months old, started with a French nanny, like Nunu, then went through all the French school system, then did his apprenticeship. So we had all those documents. And we went in October and he's still not received it now. And the document that they gave him runs out in April. So I've been like sending emails like saying, and he can't pass his driving test either, because without his teacher de séjour, they won't take his passport, even though that's ID. They say no until you've got your actual card.
Your pinky, yeah.
You can't take your driving test. So yeah, it's... Ugh.
It bottlenecks so many other, yeah.
I know when Finn started, he started doing summer jobs when he was 16. And the first job he had, they had a really good accountant, to be fair. So they said, oh, he's British. Can he work here? And he'd only got a DCEM at the time, the kind of miner's card for getting in and out of France to prove that you lived here. So we were backwards and forwards. One person at the prefecture said he can use that. Another one said, no, he can't. So we had this scramble to get him his. And look, we did get it. We got it within 6 weeks. Yeah.
What?
At 16.
Why? Yeah, but Zach's working.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's the classic example of it. It depends on the region as well. Region to region in France.
So different.
Yes. Frustrating. So what did we, going back to the Chateau DIY winner Chateau, what did we surmise from that? Is it just
I've only
boring
watched
show?
One episode and it was kind of a bit of a mix between, you remember kind of like 60 Minute Makeover in the UK? Obviously it's not
Peter Andre.
It's not 60 Minute Makeover, but it was just a bit like you need, and there was another programme in the UK about renovating, you need to renovate. It's not, I don't want to use that word, renovate, decorate, upgrade, interiors, finish. It's kind of finishing work. They're not renovating. Mm. And it's just like, yeah, they're in two couples and they have to do, there's this two garages and they're having to turn it into an events social space with a bar. So it's who comes up with the best idea for the bar, who uses what their interior is and all that kind of thing. And they're judged on that.
But I presume they've got a team of like trades there on hand build
well, it
stuff.
Doesn't show that. Yeah.
No, they have to build it themselves.
Because it's testing DIY skills to be able to...
not sure if I believe that.
To be able to maintain a chateau.
I did see a picture of someone had built a bar or something themselves. Yeah. And I was a bit like, have they really done that themselves? Because the deadline as well. And
who knows?
Where do they get all the material? Have they got to go out and buy their own materials? Because that would be interesting to see. You know, just... people in France and go and find.
Somebody's sourced it. They haven't sourced that because you wouldn't be able to do it that quickly. We know what it's like, don't we, when you're trying to source stuff. So somebody's done all that background work for them, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that firsthand, that there's a lot of production behind these
Definitely. Because they don't, most of them don't speak French. So there's no way they've just gone, we've just found this guy that sells all these pallets. Let's go and knock on his door and ask if we can barter him down. I mean, for one, you won't find him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But I think people will like it because it's Winner Chateau.
Is it interior decoration like every week? Are they just given a room every week to redecorate and that's it? And they've got to choose who's the best decorator
basically,
at the end of it to win a chateau. Seems quite an
easy
task.
So this time they're doing this room. So the couples are in twos. So there's two couples. So they're in teams. And then they have a challenge each episode. So they had to basically build between them a wine rack out of just like a tabletop. And at that point, all the couples split. So they were doing it individually. And then who's ever out of the two couples in that team, who's ever won, whichever one won, their wine rack goes into the building.
Into the building, into the chateau that they're going to win.
Yeah, so the room that they're decorating, so the bar. So then that...
Oh, no. So, like, loads of different people are winning each week and they're putting, like, random stuff other people have... built that doesn't perhaps follow any theme or design.
It's just, to prove that they're competent DIYers and they can maintain a building like that on their own. Bonne chance.
Oh, it's the maintenance.
Yeah. It's more of maintaining.
Yeah. I mean, building a wine rack doesn't really seem like maintenance
challenges.
They should create like scenarios, like, you know, someone should go and like, you know, mess up the plumbing. crack open a waste pipe and let the sewerage flow for a few days and then bring them in and say,
how'd you deal with this?
What would you do? Show us, go.
And what about
you, Ellis?
What about that picture that you shared with us a few weeks ago, Rosie, of John up on that roof, and you pulled the layers back, and it was just rotten. It was just a hodgepodge of sheer workmanship.
Oh my god, it was awful. Yeah. It was like, I hate to say, some Brit owned it, and I think either they got another Brit who said they were a roofer to come and do it, or he did it himself, I'm not sure which. But it's a new client, so a new person's bought the property. But yeah, the layers of like just things that don't go on a roof underneath, or like trapping moisture in there. And they installed Velux, but we couldn't, because the raccordement, you know, the fittings around a Velux that you have to put around it when you fit a roof. Sorry, I'm not the technical expert, that's John. But anyway, the raccordement, I know it's called that. We had to replace it because it was just, it was, you know, rubbish. And then we couldn't find the brand of Velux. So we discovered, like, they'd brought one over from the UK that exists in the UK, but the brand doesn't actually exist at all in France. So then we couldn't get the correct raccordement for it. So it just opens a whole can of worms then, because you're left with like, right, we've got to fix this, but it's a product that we can't get hold of. And it just outlines some of the complexities.
Yeah, it becomes
really
a headache. Real for you. Yeah.
It does become a headache, yeah. But luckily we got it all done. It was okay. Another thing that I've been watching a bit of YouTube, like I said, and I've come across this new YouTuber called Yanis the Home Wrecker. I don't know if you've seen him. Do you watch YouTube Renos?
No,
at
not
all?
Really. No.
Do you not tune into those? So there's this guy, really sweet guy, Eastern European, and he's called himself Yanis the Home Wrecker, I think because he doesn't know a lot about building work, and he's being quite honest about it. But he's helping this other guy who's a Brit who's coming over from the UK once in a while to his own cottage.
You shared it with me and I watched an episode and he is this little frail kind of Eastern European guy, isn't he? He's dead petite.
He is. Yeah. He is cute. I mean, yeah. I like him. I like them both. I mean, I think it's Simon, the guy. I think he's got some skills, that other guy. I think he is a builder from the UK. I don't think he's not registered in France or living in France. I think he just has his own cottage and he's doing it bit by bit. So he's got Yanis to come over and help him. So they're filming like all these things that they're doing every week. And I have to say that I watch it because I find it hilarious. This guy, the English guy who's like proper Cockney from down south, and this Eastern European guy, the Cockney guy starts having an accent, you know, like Borat. And he starts to like talk to throughout the whole thing. One minute is a Cockney and the next minute is talking like Borat to this Eastern European guy. And it's hilarious. You've got to watch it. I don't even think he's, you know.
Do you not find
it,
though? Have you not heard people in France do that? When they're talking to French people in English, they put on this strange French accent when they're in English. It's just like a weird like...
I know what you mean, yeah. I'm probably guilty of it myself, to be honest, sometimes. It's funny because Zach's friends, when they come round sometimes, they say words in English and it's with a really strong French accent. I can't think of any off the top of my head. But then you start to say it back to them in the way that they've said it to you.
Do you know what Finder, just going back to the kids, he was the only kind of English-speaking boy in his class and they got a new English teacher. So obviously they have to speak English as much as possible. I think he was in kind of quatrième or troisième, I can't remember. So what he started doing to the English teacher, because they didn't really know who he was, he started speaking to him in English in a French accent. So his mate said to him, do your French accent. And he didn't know for ages, didn't know. And then Finn didn't get married.
The teacher didn't realise.
No, because when he asked him to speak English, he did it in a French accent, as if he was one of the kids in the class. He didn't have a very good relationship with the teacher after that.
Zach went through a bit of the same thing with his English teachers at school. I remember him bringing back homework. It reminds me of when he was, I think he was about 8 or 9, bringing back some homework. And for a swimming suit or a swimsuit, they put bath suit. And I was like, you have to go and tell your teacher that no one in the UK calls a swimming suit a bath suit. Yeah. Maybe a bathing suit, but it's quite an old way of saying it. But this was a bath suit. So we went back to school. And because sometimes I think it's like the curriculum has deemed that it has to be done in a certain way. I don't know. Like, it is that word. She was so insistent. And it was like, you know, she wouldn't accept it wasn't a bath suit.
Mm. Some of them will only teach American English. So they'll come back and say, Finn was like, they told me that it's not football, it's soccer. So you tell them it's football. It is not soccer. In English, it's football.
Yes.
But just little tiny things where they'd use the Americanisms.
Mm. Yeah, nuances. I don't mind it. What I found was that they were so adamant that it had to be that way. And it's almost like, excuse me, I'm British. I think that was a bit like that. Yeah, I all of a sudden became like, I know the Queen's English.
But if it's a French person, they're very patriotic about the language and how you pronounce things and how you do that. Yet if you try and do it.
Yes.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, it's no, we've learnt this way and that's the way it's got to be, yeah. There is something else that we've not touched upon yet. And it relates back to episode 5 that we did about insurance.
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
And there's been a bit of banter on Facebook this week about stuff. And I thought we should touch on that.
I think it's arrived because I put a link on, didn't I? An old post, and I misread the post. So what I did was I went onto the site and I searched Decennial Insurance and looked for posts that had a lot of kind of comments. So I just stuck the link in just because it was on there. And then it would kind of, people would get notifications. Well, it kind of went boof, didn't it?
Can of worms.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was an old post from 2024.
Yeah.
And yes, it did ruffle a few feathers.
But,
yeah, it did.
But, you know, we're about being uncensored and it's about making sure that those topics that people, you know, either want to keep under the radar, want to ignore, don't want to accept, you know, remain visibly out there in the open so that people become, you know, educated, you know, that Decennial Insurance, whether you like it or not, it's part of French regulation when working here in France. You know,
you
wouldn't drive around in a car without your insurance. We don't like paying it, but we have to. I mean, well, that case in point, that chap that was clearly getting a bit, I'd so wanted to say,
you're an idiot,
put out there. So, well, so can you confirm?
You're an uninsured idiot.
Yes, yeah. Are you letting us all know that you're running your business without Decennial Insurance? Yes or no?
I honestly think that specific case, that guy, he had read it and misread it.
Yes.
And he was so convinced he'd read it correctly. And this is what it was. I mean, he was convinced that no plumbing works are integrated into a structure of a house. So a plumber doesn't have to be insured at all.
That's what he was implying, wasn't it? And it was such wrong information for homeowners.
Yes.
There was an element of what he was saying was true.
Yes.
But it was only a slight element. He's basically took this blanket phrase of, KPEB have told me I don't need it for fitting this and that. No, you don't. For particular equipment. Not saying you don't need it, you do need it because you're a plumber. What it's saying is, if a client tries to claim, it might not come under that insurance and it won't be covered, but he still needs it.
Yeah. I thought it was quite clear, to be honest, at the end of the day. It's like, if you've got an existing system, like say if you're changing your fuel heating system, your boiler, for a pump au chaleur, and you're keeping the existing pipeworks, then the pump au chaleur doesn't come up that's fitted to an existing system doesn't come under the 10-year decennial because it might be everything behind it that goes wrong. So I think it's about that. It's about it's also if you fit a wood burner to an existing flue. I think if you have a completely new system from scratch, then it's all insured, even the pump au chaleur and the wood burner. If you have a new flue, the entire job. And actually it protects the artisan. The insurance companies obviously can't it's getting away from that grey area of whether or not you're insured, because if someone else has touched a bit of your work, then the insurance companies have problems determining who did that bit. So now they've just said, okay, if you fit a new wood burner, we're not going to insure any of it because you've not replaced the flue.
Case in point, there was a chap in one of the Facebook groups local to me that whilst the Strictly groups were on pause for the Christmas and New Year, one of their fake accounts decided to pounce on something that I'd put up about too many hands spoiling the broth kind of thing. And he adamantly said that I was wrong. And then a couple of the usual suspects of trades that just kind of, you know, don't like listening to what females have to say, kind of joined on the bandwagon and shared a link that was exactly about that. There was a chap who, a company had put in a heating system or a pellet stove. It caused a fire, ruined the lounge. It was taken to court. The installer was deemed to be at fault. €750,000 later, but the insurance company, I won't say who it is, turned round and appealed and went, there's a great area around the existing setup of how that boiler was already installed. So therefore, the appeal was overturned and that company, that installer. And in my head, I thought, surely if you knew what you were doing, you would have checked before you did your installation anyway. So in my mind, I'm still thinking the installer is still somewhat at fault. You know, Paul wouldn't do an electrical installation without checking. You wouldn't do it over something. You'd kind of rip it all out and start again. But yeah, I think what's beginning to happen,
I suppose,
is that high-level cases are coming into the public domain more and people are going, yep, I don't need Decino insurance because that...
Yeah, but those cases have got, like, kind of like saying grey areas and nuances that don't... But what we were trying to say to that plumber is...
absolutely.
That plumber, any artisan, needs to hold Decino insurance as a legal requirement.
Yes.
And he was adamant, wasn't he? And he actually ended up, in the end, I stopped engaging with him because he was doing me head in. In the end, he was literally sharing the same stuff that I was sharing to him. And it was saying what I was saying to him. And I thought...
I know. I just don't think he read it. I don't think he either can't... Because, we all know, you can read something in French and it... Almost, you can change it to your own narrative. If you don't know how to translate something and if you've not got enough knowledge behind the subject, I suppose, you can make it, you can turn it into what you believe. Yes. It's like that, you know, I suppose that's how false information, misinformation gets out on the internet. Someone spun it their way. Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I saw it. He was just spinning it his way. Yeah. But actually, when you read it, it wasn't what he was saying. And also, he was like... I mean, what plumber doesn't put pipework into an actual building behind walls ever? Like, is he just like going round plonking something on existing stuff all the time? Because that's what he's saying. If he's just doing that, then maybe he doesn't need to. But if he's just doing that, how's he making like a living out of it? Because you don't get a lot of work without touching the pipeworks as a plumber.
Well, that kind of wraps up nicely.
Yes, it does.
We've covered a lot as per usual, which is absolutely fabulous. So until next time.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Bye. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the show to be sure you don't miss anything. Your hosts have been...
Michaela Wilkins.
And Sue Peake-Russell. French Renault Diaries Uncensored was produced and mixed by Katie Wright. And the music is by Grand Project.